I have it.
That boy like Madea. Let go, Madea.
Tonga by Lord. Blocked by Armstead. Two into the end zone.
One favorite degenerate back with another Day One Dolphins podcast hosted by your boy Ouch. Follow me on Twitter at YFenceY. Missing today, Chief Sutt. Still follow him on Twitter at Chief Sutt. Follow the podcast Twitter at Day One Dolphins. Stay up to date. Let's get down to it. All right, so we're going to run it back this treacherous Bills game last minute for you. Tried to get it done a little earlier in the week, but Sutt and I's schedules just didn't align being on opposite coasts here. I watched a couple people break it down. One of my favorite, who's obviously a Dolphins fan, I highly recommend you go watch this kid, I want to say. Sounds young. His name is Ryder McConville. He has a YouTube channel. He's always breaking down, you know, predominantly Dolphins film. You can watch the All 22 by yourself. It's available if you just sign up on Red Zone or NFL.com. We watch some of that together, usually week to week, sometimes separately, but we'll start with this Bills game here. Man, tough game. I want to start by saying this is still the beginning of the season here. You know, we had just reached the quarter mark and we went 3-1. Good teams get better week to week, no matter who they're playing, who they lost to, who they beat. We have a new defensive coordinator installing a new defensive system and scheme here, and we're really seeing the warts of it coming along and seeing the players grasp it. Now, that's not the only thing that happened here. That was the Dolphins' fault. Not only was it struggling to thrive in this new defensive scheme, but it was also Vic Fangio seemingly having no idea what to expect out of his players capability-wise. I don't want to be all over the place here, but it was a combination of those two things, and then it was a combination of the Bills playing on fire. I mean, and not only Josh Allen executing, but Sean McDermott out-scheming the defense. They watched tape. They saw Denver, even, during that blowout, succeed with certain plays, and then, you know, kind of put a little wrinkle of it in their offense, and it was no problem for them to complete those type of plays versus our defense. But if we're going to break down some of the main points that I think, you know, contributed to this loss, let's start by saying the injuries. Not an excuse, but I'm just saying there's significant differences in what this team looks like personnel-wise with Jalen Ramsey, Nick Needham, Teron Armstead, Connor Williams, and Deshaun Elliott. And that's not even everybody, but to have Jalen Ramsey cover Stephon Diggs would be a night and day difference from having Kader Coe play out of position. He's a slot corner traditionally. Now you're having him play outside with a top five receiver and maybe top, I don't know, higher than that route runner this year. Just a recipe for disaster there. I scratched my head about it. I'm wondering, you know, why you don't have Xavien Howard cover him. Xavien Howard's traveled with Diggs and played against Stephon Diggs. Whether or not he's won that battle, he's done it for years, and he's shadowed other elite receivers for years. It's not new to him. It's mind blowing to me that you chose to have Kader do this and not Xavien Howard when you have him on the field. But Justin Bethel was asked to do a little too much, in my opinion. You could see that he had no idea with some of the assignments. He thought that he was passing off, you know, certain coverages and responsibilities, and he ended up just letting people run by him to the end zone. Just bad angles. Who else in the secondary here. They were playing a lot of cover three. We got to see the return of Brandon Jones at safety, except they were playing him again. This is a Vic Fangio issue for me. You have Brandon Jones playing this like coverage style defense when he was traditionally more of like a in the box type of safety for us. I mean, he had 7 sacks in that system. You know, he played like this under Flores and under Josh Boyer, and he was a monster when you sent him on a blitz. And you see, he was a liability in pass coverage in the very few times that he was asked to do it in prior seasons under other coaching staffs, let alone this. He was asked to do something that we haven't seen him do well, in my opinion. Again, Vic Fangio seems to be lost on what his players' strengths are here. What else? That reminds me, shout out Ghost of Adam Gase on Twitter. He kind of said exactly how I thought it, is that you, in this defensive scheme, you're not given the... basically, every single player has to be good on this defense. All the starters have to be good. There can't be a lack of talent because everyone's asked to do a lot. The linebackers are asked to fill multiple gaps and make decisions in a split second. The DBs are asked to pass coverages off sometimes. Sometimes no, when you stick with your guy. It's just a little complicated versus what they had been running in the past. And, you know, these are all professionals and they should be better at it. But I'm watching, like, last year, under Brian Flores, whenever Jalen Phillips got sent into pass coverage, standing up, backing up, backpedaling, everyone was so upset. No one was going after Jalen Phillips because it was obvious that you could see on film why he wasn't getting to the passer. He was asked to do a bunch of stuff that he doesn't even know how to do for the sake of keeping the defense confusing. But still, I mean, how complicated are you trying to make it when you just have a pure pass rusher you just need to send to the quarterback? You know, we're seeing Bradley Chubb do that under Vic Fangio multiple times on tape here. I'm seeing Bradley Chubb 15, 16, 10 yards out running backwards to cover a flat defender, or he's a hook defender, and it just doesn't make any sense to me. The ongoing narrative on Twitter is, you know, Chubb is trash, Wilkins is trash, Jalen Phillips isn't good either. It's just, to me, if you look at this game, you can see, let's see, Andrew Van Ginkle is the one getting the praise, right? Because he gets the sacks, and I love Andrew Van Ginkle. It's not to slight him in any way, shape, or form. But on both sacks, you see who creates the first pressure on the play. One of them is Christian Wilkins, and then Van Ginkle gets the sack, and the other one is Bradley Chubb, and then Van Ginkle gets the sack. A lot of these have been like, they were so close, and it's not that much different than what we saw in the past. Like so close, a hand on Josh Allen's back, grabbing a jersey, you know, and he just escapes. Or the play breaks down, and now Stephon Diggs has 6 seconds on a DB as opposed to just whatever that 2-3 second route was. And it's like, once that gets extended, if your pass rush doesn't get home, he's going to kill you, and he did. Again, shout out the Bills offense and the game plan and the execution. They were just more prepared. But if you look at how they tried to plan for our D-line, Christian Wilkins was double teamed, I think, every single play. Zach Sealer and Christian Wilkins were both double teamed simultaneously. Wilkins still played fine, in my opinion. Sealer and Wilkins both played fine. Neither of them played like amazing, but they certainly didn't play bad as far as I'm concerned. I think Wilkins had a batted ball, and there's a lot of hustling to the sideline. You saw Zach Sealer diving to stop a running back. I mean, they are moving for the big guys. Wilkins had a tackle for a loss. Chubb definitely played below average. You know, I'm not going to rip him like everybody else is, but it was a below average game for him. But again, I just don't understand some of the stuff that I'm seeing here and why they're asking these guys to do things that they don't necessarily do. That's not why they came to Miami. It's just getting too cute. I don't like it. The linebackers are required to be so much more disciplined whenever we, you know, line up in these light boxes and expect them to, you know, compensate for one less guy there to make the tackle. And it looks like so far this year, David Long Jr. has been a pretty good addition, especially considering that he replaced Alandon Roberts. He still has that, you know, meet you in the backfield big time tackle. Doesn't look like he whiffs as often as Alandon does either. But Jerome Baker, I think, has to do a better job at complementing that. If you're going to have a guy who takes chances like that, and I love it. David Long looks great. I really do love him taking chances and going to try and catch the running back in the backfield, which he did do in this game, and the quarterback as well. He's a good tackler for the most part. I don't think anyone had a particularly good day tackling in this game, but Jerome Baker has to do better at not hesitating. And in my opinion, he's being asked to do too much. It seems like every year they just switch up what Jerome's going to do. And he's just never quite been the complete like Fred Warner type of guy here. Like he's a good linebacker if you know what you're getting out of him. You know, we're watching him have to cover multiple gaps while David Long shoots through one. And the half a second that he takes to decide which way he needs to go, you know, leaves him vulnerable for the offensive lineman running up into his face to kind of, you know, position him where they want him so that the running back can fly by him. And he got beat a lot of times doing that. But it's not as simple as people are making it out to be, like, oh, all you have to do is cover the B gap and you had it. No, he's covering multiple gaps. He's having to make decisions. There's a lot of mental work going into what Jerome Baker is being asked to do. Not to make an excuse for him, but it's not all just black and white. He's trash, this or that. I'm hoping, the reason I bring this up is because I'm hoping that when you see mental mistakes and you see decision-making, that is what causes some of these gashed plays. It kind of gives me hope that, well, hey, this can get better, you know, as opposed to, you know, maybe watching a corner just get toasted by a guy who just runs fast. That's not Stephon Diggs. You know, you might be like, well, there's no amount of learning the system that's going to change that or fix that. But with these types of problems, I'm hoping that this is the kind of thing that you do get better week to week with. But yeah, discipline is what I would say. Be more disciplined. Try to help David Long's gambles and help him make these big time plays play a more conservative style of ball here from Jerome. As far as Kader Kohou goes, Jesus, probably the worst game we've ever seen him play. You know, like I said, he was asked to do something that is almost impossible in containing Stephon Diggs. Not even containing Stephon Diggs, but man, were they on one again. I just got to say, like, they were really firing on all cylinders here. Kader doesn't play outside. He played in the slot, was great in the slot. Have no idea why he was asked to do that over Cam Smith, who we saw looked pretty good outside. Justin Bethel, like I said earlier, bunch of bad decision making on his part, not knowing his responsibilities. And then let's say on, as far as we talked about the injuries, you go back now that we talked about, you know, what players seem to have contributed so heavily to this loss, and you think to yourself, okay, well, Jalen Ramsey on Stephon Diggs would have been huge. You know, Nick Needham in the slot there would have been huge. And to me, especially, is a big one was Deshaun Elliott, man. Not a like all-star name on our defense. So I didn't expect for it to be such a big ordeal, but man, him being off the field and Brandon Jones having to replace him was just oof. If I had to rank in order of like biggest injury impacts for this game, I think that might on defense, that might be the, like, that might be, if we would have had Xavier Howard on Stephon Diggs, Cam Smith on the opposite boundary, and then like Kader in the slot, I think that missing Deshaun Elliott would have been worse specifically for this game than maybe even missing Ramsey. Like, it was unbelievable. And I don't know if that's a testament to how well Deshaun Elliott's been playing or if it's just how bad Brandon Jones was, but either way, on the offense, we had some injuries as well. Teron didn't make it through the entire game. Go figure. The big one would be for me is Connor Williams. Missing Connor Williams and having Liam Eikenberg out there at center was insane. Absolutely insane. And what made it even worse is that the Bills game planned for that. They're shoving people down the A-gaps on left and right at the exact same time of Liam Eikenberg. They took advantage of it. They did, like, you know, all teams try to formulate some sort of a test or an attack when they see that there's injuries on a team, right? That's not anything new. The Dolphins do it to opponents. You know, you see a corner get hurt and the guy comes in to replace him. Start throwing the ball at the guy that came in to replace him. Let's see what he's made of. But, man, the Bills went like Bill Belichick style on it. They saw that our center was out and that this guy who doesn't snap the ball and hasn't played center was our center. And they played against Liam before. They're well aware who he is. And they said, all right, let's just murder this guy. And they did. And it worked. I think they had 4 sacks on 2 of this game. In the beginning of the game, it looked like we're going to go drive for drive. You know, that scripted one was really good. Defense let up an easy one. Another good touchdown. Tua making his way through his progressions. Then we gets a little bit shaky when they start getting a lot of pressure. They start covering up the first read, forcing Tua to move through his progressions, which I want to start by saying Tua did not play a bad game here. He didn't play that all-star game that, you know, even if the rest of your team is playing terrible, you played so well that, you know, you win the game on your own. But he by no means did he play a bad game. He didn't play like, oh, the team's losing, so I'm gonna lose my mind like Jimmy Garoppolo and, you know, melt down with the rest of you guys. It wasn't like that. He was trying to keep a steady ship here. But yeah, by no means special either. So we had the one interception, which to me was reminiscent of the 49ers game we played last year, with watching their linebackers, especially Fred Warner, be so conscious of the amount of depth that they were able to get. When you see, you know, tape of Tua eating up the middle of the field, throwing the ball approximately 20 yards down the field in the middle of the field constantly, you know, somewhere between 12 and 20 yards, you know, these linebackers are able to predict that and put themselves in a position to at least make it harder of a throw. You know, when you're layering that ball over the linebacker and the linebacker's 5 yards away from you and your receiver's 15 yards away from you, that's a very large gap right there that you can let that ball fall into. Whereas, you know, if the linebacker has 10, 15 yards of depth and they're 15 yards away from you and your receiver's 20 yards away from you and the safety is 23 yards away from you, means you got like that, you know, 5-6 yard gap there that you have to fit the ball in 20 yards down the field. He overshoots one, sails it, and shout out their linebacker. I don't even remember his name. Number 41, Bernard. Yeah, I think that was his name. Wow, what a player. Sutton and I were actually watching tape of him from the last game. We were laughing. We're like, who is this guy? Great player. He was the one that got that depth on that play where Tua sailed it to Robbie Chosen and threw a pick there. Let's see. On offense, aside from that, the running game was going well. Mike McDaniel said he strayed away from it a little too early. Heard that one before. And once they started taking away Tua's first read and forcing him to go through the progressions, like I said, there were plenty of instances where you could see Tua play well. He's going through it. But when you don't have time, you know, they were combining that with the pressure, especially on Liam Eikenberg, and forcing him to have to not have time to go through his progressions. You know, if that first read wasn't open and they're in your face, it was more, now you have to make a special play. And he made a couple of them, but, you know, not a lot of guys are going to be able to live an entire 60 minutes being forced to make special play after special play after special play with the personnel lacking on the offensive line that we saw there. Let's see. Yeah, I'm really excited to see what we look like in Miami versus the Buffalo Bills. I'll say that. I'm not as scared, and the world isn't ending. The sky isn't falling for me. We're missing a lot of players, and I'm almost happy that we were missing them in the beginning of the season, because if we keep racking up wins and then all of our best players are inevitably going to be playing for us in the later part of the season, I mean, that's kind of a silver lining here. You know, if every player's chance of being injured is, you know, per game because they play so many games every year, and we're winning games or getting by right now, and we're going to only need to potentially to play Jalen Ramsey and, you know, Teron Armstead and, you know, Connor Williams, Nick Needham comes back, any of these guys for like 5-6 games at the end of the season. Oof. I'm feeling pretty good about it. That's just me trying to be the optimistic one. I'm pretending that Sud is here and he's the optimistic one. He lives through me. I'm channeling it today. But yeah, man, in Miami, we'll see what happens when they come down there. I'm hoping it'll be a different game. I'm hoping that we'll have a grasp of the scheme. I'm hoping that the offense will have some answers for what they want to do. And to be honest, I might not be as critical as Sut would be about Josh Allen, but if he was here, he'd say, yeah, he played a great game. He does that every year. Just so happened to be one against us. He's a turnover merchant and an impending, you know, ticking time bomb of when he's going to, you saw what he looked like in the Jets game. That's what Sut would say. And the hater in me says, yeah, I kind of agree. I would like to see if Josh Allen does it again, you know, later on in the year or not. Because even though he does play well a lot of the time, that game was just, I mean, he was just on point. It didn't look like he came out with any intention of losing that game. And let's see, moving on to the Giants game though. Oh, also I did have that predicted as a loss. Sut did not. He predicted we go 4-0. I predicted we went 3-1. So Ausman is right on schedule, baby. Don't fret. This Giants game, which we both predicted that we would win preseason. We predicted it as, you know, a little bit of a more modest score difference, but we didn't exactly know what the NFL's landscape was going to look like at the time. So Sut had the game going 17-35 with a dub. I had it going 17-24 with a dub. I wouldn't be surprised if the Giants don't score 17, and I would be surprised if we don't score more than 24. Like I said, honestly, I feel like there's a pretty good chance we score more than 35, like Sut said. We're looking at a 40-ish potential here. I think the Giants are just very close to the Denver Broncos as it pertains to best suited to try and stop this offense. They're not. They have to be amongst the bottom few teams in the league, you know, personnel-wise, scheme-wise, of how they would have a chance at standing up against this Miami offense. Wink Martindale came over from the Ravens, I believe, to the Giants as a defensive coordinator. Blitzes just about 50% of the time, and we see how good Tua is versus the Blitz, you know, how fast of a processor he is. I have a feeling that either one or two things is going to happen. Either you're going to have to employ some sort of change to your defensive philosophy just for this game, and they played on Monday, so you have a short week, and you got to travel from New Jersey to Miami. It just feels like they're going to have to run the blitz heavy scheme. Like, I don't think they're going to be able to change that much. I think it's going to be a big game for Tyreek Hill. I think it's going to be a big game for Jalen Waddle. I think it's probably a big game for Raheem Mostert and Devon Achane again. I saw a joke on Twitter about you should have to count to 5 Mississippi before you try to sack the Giants quarterback, because they gave up 7 sacks to the Seattle Seahawks. The Giants have also allowed Daniel Jones to be sacked 23 times this season through those 4 games, which is asinine. He's been sacked more than 7 times, 7 or more times, twice out of 4 games. So going back to what we talked about with this Buffalo Bills game and our pass rush and not being able to get home, and you know, everyone complained about Bradley Chubb, Christian Wilkins, Jalen Phillips. I think this is a big game for them too. And I think as long as Vic Fangio, you know, sends them on a blitz a couple times, or, you know, has an answer for the coverage versus what they're trying to do with their receivers and gives some opportunity to apply pressure, I think we're going to see Daniel Jones have another rough day. He's obviously better when Saquon Barkley's on the field. It's still up in the air whether Saquon's going to play or not. Between Daniel Jones being the lead rusher in the games when Saquon's not in the game, and that, you know, the stress that a player like Saquon Barkley puts on your defense, he's definitely better when he's on the field. Miami does have, you know, bottom four in pretty much every pass defense metric. It's inflated a little bit by that Buffalo game, and we're still early in the season, but we are amongst the lower teams ranked as far as pass defense. And we're also not doing too great in run defense. We allow an average of 4.9 yards a carry. Luckily, the Giants have been worse, but if Saquon did play, you know, I could see there being a couple little gash plays here and there, just based on Saquon Barkley versus what we saw our linebackers struggle with last game. Hopefully it's a bounce back game. I hope that they take the opportunity to kind of beat up on the Giants here, especially on defense, our defense versus their offense, like a get back game. I think it's important. I think that if Saquon does miss the game, man, it might be a long day for them. We might even see a little Mike White come out. But it is the NFL. Anything could happen. It does take a lot for me to be this confident. And after watching what the Giants looked like on Monday, abysmal is the word that comes to mind. I mean, they are looking like they're coming for the number one pick in the NFL at this point. Between the 40-0 loss to the Cowboys, it just this Monday night game, it's just he looks, Daniel Jones looks like he's regressing. It should be a very, very fun game for everyone in fantasy, and it should be a fun game for us as Dolphins fans. I could spend 10 minutes talking about what we could do, but it's not going to be much different than what we've been doing. I don't think they have an answer for any of our receivers, but most importantly, their slot receiver is someone who's been getting abused. I forget his name, but whoever gets to line up there, we could see a big Braxton Berrios game. You know, be interested to see if Chase Claypool gets any looks. If the game does get out of hand, we just acquired Chase Claypool from the Steelers, the Bears. Sorry, he went from the Steelers to the Bears, Bears to Miami. Been kind of a problem guy in the locker room. I think everybody kind of knows the screenshots that go around on the internet of him celebrating a first down when the game is on the line and, you know, the clock's running and they have no timeouts, stuff like that. The TikToks, you know, he's just one of those guys. But physically, he's massive. He's pushing like 240 pounds and runs like a 4.4. I think he's like 6'4", 6'5". He's a big boy. He's what they would say a Popeye's biscuit away from a tight end is what Booger McFarland would say. And I don't disagree with that. So if the game gets out of hand, little Mike White, Claypool in there with some easy stuff, that would be interesting to see if they even tried that and to get cute like that. But yeah, man, should be an easy one here. Interested to see how the run defense plays regardless of if Saquon Barkley plays or not. And I'm very interested to see if Vic Fangio was kind of humbled as far as what type of play calling he could get away with the personnel on the field. Other than that, interested to see what everyone else has to say. Follow me on Twitter at YFinsYY. Follow Sut, even though he's not here, at Chief Sut. Follow the podcast at Day Number One Dolphins. And fins up. Because we're the Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're
Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We drink the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, cause we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami.